Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Kane Pittman of the Pick and Roll and Fansided. What's up, fellas?
How's it going?
Kane, welcome on the show, man. Really excited to talk about one of my favorite teams heading into this new season.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was pretty, I'm always pretty excited when I get the chance to talk Barcelona and Bucks in particular, but I'm probably a little less willing to go full optimistic about the Bucks, but I'm just going to see how it plays out.
Yeah, for sure.
I'll sway you. Give me time. I'll sway you this episode.
Before we get started, as always, a quick reminder, you can check out our other shows, our other previews on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. And before we look forward to the Bucks next season, we're going to look back at last year. Obviously, 44-38, first round knockout in 7 games to Boston. You know, somewhat of a disappointing season. Obviously, Jason Kidd was fired during the season. What were your thoughts on last season, Kane?
For mine, it was a disappointment. And I think there was obviously some good elements to that in terms of individuals, but on the whole, it was a disappointment because, again, they didn't get any further than they did the year before. They were out in the first round again. They probably got the matchup that everyone thought was the one that they wanted, and obviously Boston went through and had a great run, but at the time, they're in a position to move forward, and they didn't do it. And I think while Giannis, again, took another big step, and Middleton obviously finished the season and had great playoffs. I think you can't, it's impossible to look at that season and think of it as anything other than a disappointment, other than probably, as you mentioned, the step in the right direction of moving Jason Kidd on.
Yeah, I think anytime you fire your head coach halfway through the season, you're generally not going to like the results that follow in that season. It kind of feels like you're already prepping for the future. And obviously Jason Kidd, I didn't watch a ton of Bucks games over his tenure as the head coach, but I just know that there was a lot of unhappy fans with him. I know that even, Nick, who is a Nets fan, really wasn't a big Jason Kidd fan during his tenure in Brooklyn either. It just seems like Jason Kidd just isn't that good of a head coach. Obviously Antetokounmpo started last season off on fire. He still progressed, but he didn't finish the year like he started. The Bledsoe trade didn't necessarily go as well. Brogdon was banged up for much of the year. Jabari Parker as well didn't come back till late in the season, and he didn't look very good. So there were just a lot of things that went wrong, and as you mentioned, it led to them losing in the first round in 7 games. Just neither one of those teams in that first round wanted to win on the road. And as they say, the series doesn't start until you win on the road. That series technically never started. Yeah. It's still going. But it was definitely a disappointment because, you're looking at that talent and it's led by Antetokounmpo. You expect at least a second round appearance, and this team just couldn't get, to the middle of the pack in the East.
Kane, what were your thoughts on Eric Bledsoe, obviously acquiring him early in the season and the fit never feeling super smooth and obviously some struggles in the playoffs? What do you think was the reason for that? Was that just coming to the team during the year or just an actual fit problem?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty unique situation to get a guy like that early in November. It doesn't really happen that often where you get a guy that people would perceive would push you over the top that early. It's normally late in the season before the Christmas period anyway. So I think he was actually really good. And I think that certainly after the new year, the sort of January through March, he was hitting his threes. It was a big reason why they won a lot of games. And with Middleton and Giannis, it was basically those three were getting you 65 to 70 points a game. And that's why we were even hovering around the 500 where we were. But he's got his limitations. I think everyone knows that at this point. He's not a true point guard as such. He can be prone to taking bad shots, and certainly last year we've seen a lot of him taking shots early in the shot clock, which was frustrating. And some nights he would shoot, up to, 1 for 7, 1 for 8 from 3, and you're wondering what's going on. But I thought heading into the playoffs, he was going to be a key reason why we would, or Milwaukee would be able to win that series. And then as we've seen, I mean, Terry Rozier just completely destroyed him. He didn't handle it very well. And it probably threw up more question marks on where the future is with Bledsoe than anything else, heading into obviously a contract year now. But I think the trade itself, he was good and probably underratedly good. I think he did cop a bit of a hard time from Bucks fans. I don't think the top three was the issue with the Bucks, but certainly the playoffs leaves a bit of a bad taste.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a pretty big Bledsoe fan since his days on the Clippers. Obviously, his time in Phoenix has been, you know, up and down. He was hurt the 1 year. Obviously, Phoenix just hasn't been very good, so it's tough to gauge how good Bledsoe really is. I was a big fan of the trade when it initially went down, and, you know, he just never looked in sync, as you kind of mentioned. You know, he at times does get kind of ball hoggy, tunnel vision-ish. He likes having the ball in his hand, which realistically it's, you know, it's better if Antetokounmpo was running that, you know, point forward position. You know, and like you said, in the playoffs, I mean, of all people, Terry Rozier really got in Bledsoe's head. And it was clear, it was evident, especially on, you know, the middle of that series. I expect Bledsoe to come back aggressive this year and play a lot better. But I just think, you know, between the head coaches also getting fired and Kidd and, you know, that being somewhat, you know, just the mix up in the coaching staff, I think that has an effect for a guy who's also just coming in and trying to learn how to play with new teammates. I just think Bledsoe probably wasn't fully comfortable last season, which probably was a big reason to why we just didn't see, I think, the best version of Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, I think a full offseason should help him in the coaching change, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But what was the highlight of last season for the Bucks?
Well, it seems like a bit of an easy answer, but it was Giannis. He really, and I haven't experienced this from my time of watching the Bucks. But you get the feeling, or you get this feeling from watching, it might be Golden State if you're watching Steph Curry or LeBron or that sort of thing, where you would, the Bucks were frustrating as a team, but leading up to each game or whatever it was, you were excited to watch to see what he would do. And I mean, he was just amazing. And yeah, I feel like the hype around Giannis in terms of MVP and all that sort of thing dipped as the season wore on. And I think that was more out of the fact that the Bucks were struggling as a team. But I mean, he was incredible, and he had a ridiculous load. You know, he was playing up to 37 minutes a night. Individually, as in what was his probably biggest highlight for mine, it was game 6 in Milwaukee. He came off game 5 where he actually, for the first time really that I remember, he was getting criticized. If you're watching TV and reading all the stuff in the media, he only took 10 shots in game 5 on the road. He wasn't as aggressive as you would have liked. And he came back in game 6. And like I mentioned, for the first time in his career, everyone was saying, well, okay, well, is Giannis going to be able to stand up to this pressure? The Bucks had a horrible record in game 6 over the last 10 years. And he had 31 points, 14 rebounds. It was his moment of saying, well, okay, this is the first time I've sort of got this type of criticism, and this is how I'm going to respond. I'm going to like carry my team to a victory. And obviously it didn't work out in game 7, but it was a pretty big moment.
What's a highlight for you, Corey?
I mean, I think it's got to be Antetokounmpo, but I'll also say Middleton. I think Middleton this year, especially with Jabari Parker missing a lot of this season, really proved that he is the second best player on this team, especially in the playoffs. I don't have the exact number. I want to say that Middleton shot like 54% from three in that first round series. I know that he shot a ridiculous total. I know the one game he had the buzzer beater to tie the game and send into overtime with like 3 seconds left, almost near half court. He was really good. And actually, yeah, okay, he shot, no way, he shot 61% from three in that series. That is ridiculous.
Chris Middleton.
Yeah. For me, it was Chris Middleton. I just like the fact that finally, you know, too, he was healthy last year. He missed some time. And he just, to me, proved that he is the perfect kind of guy in San Antetokounmpo. He's nice and long. He's got that wingspan. He can play defense. He can play multiple positions. And he's just a deadly shooter. So for me, it was between Antetokounmpo and Middleton.
Yeah, obviously, I think Giannis just sticks out for making that jump and becoming one of arguably the top five, top seven players in the league. And like you said, Corey, Middleton definitely showed some things, and I think we'll even see more of an improvement with the new head coach, Budenholzer. But biggest disappointment of last season?
Was the defense again. And you probably felt heading into the season that it was inevitable that the defense was not going to be good. And that's despite all the individual talent they have. And that was probably just due to the fact that Jason Kidd is so hard-headed. And we've seen in the first 3 years that he really is not a guy that has a plan B in any situation. And he kept on trotting out the super aggressive trapping defense that clearly didn't work in the last two seasons. He had some success with it in the first season, and I guess that was enough for him to decide that he was going to run that out until he got fired. And eventually that happened. And eventually that happened in January. It was going nowhere. And this is with Giannis and Middleton and Bledsoe, Thonmaker and John Henson can provide some good rim protection. So they've got all the pieces. Tony Snell is another one. They've pretty much gone out and intentionally drafted and traded for guys with length and defensive versatility. And then despite that, Jason Kidd just went completely against that principle and had the guys double-teaming the ball handler in every single play. And it pretty much rendered the length useless. And instead of a defense that has the potential to be potentially top five, certainly top 10, they were around the 20 mark again, and they became a team that had to score 110 points a night to win games. And it was frustrating, and certainly that was the big disappointment.
For me, my disappointment is kind of a toss-up between two things. It's Thonmaker really not making a jump. Going into last season, I kind of bought into the fact that he was about to be like a top-flight center, at least take a giant leap in his game. The shooting percentage dipped to 41%. The three-point percentage dipped. His playing time went up slightly, but he just didn't look that good into the playoffs. In the playoffs, playoff Thonmaker has become a thing. It just hasn't translated into the NBA yet. Obviously, he's still going to be only 21 years old this upcoming season, so he's got a ton of time to develop. Just from what I expected going into last season, that was a disappointment. And then as well, Malcolm Brogdon only being able to play 48 games because of, I think he had a hamstring injury, I believe. And the fact that he missed so much time, I just think it hurt the rhythm this team could have formed. And I think he's going to be a big part of any success this team has going forward because of the fact that he's just a really good two-way guard.
Great point about Brogdon missing time, too. And I think that kind of just took him out of sync, being a solid player he is. But also a disappointment for me would probably be Jabari Parker in the playoffs and Eric Bledsoe. Both guys didn't play up to par into the level we know they can play. But moving on from last season, talking about this year's rankings, the Bucks are coming in at number 13 in the OTG Power Rankings. What do you think about this? Too high, too low, fair?
Yeah, I saw the rankings, and I think what I tried to do was separate the East from the West, mostly because the West is just, they're probably going to have, 10 sides battling for the playoffs there. And on the East, I think the Bucks were ranked fifth there behind Boston, Philly, Toronto, and Indiana. I think Boston, Philly, and Toronto are the clear top three right now. Obviously, Toronto, you're basing that on the fact that Kawhi is going to play and he's going to be close to the level that we know. And then that next tier is going to be Indiana and Milwaukee. I think they're the next two that are clearly going to be battling for that last home court position. And that, like we spoke about, that was the difference between the Bucks getting through the first round. So that's going to be important. And I think People probably expect that the Bucks are going to take a step, but I feel like they've also thought that for quite a while now. The upgrade in coach is going to be big, and they've also had a nice couple of additions, which we'll touch on later, I know. But for now, as it stands, I think I probably would like to think the Bucks are probably going to be pushing towards a little bit higher, maybe 10 overall. But in terms of the East, I think that's about right. I think they haven't done enough for me to sit here and say, yes, they belong to be with the top echelon in the East. So, yeah, they need to earn that type of respect.
I think 13 is perfect, especially because of how the East and West are split up on the power ranking. So, like you said, it puts them fifth in the East. I think they're somewhere between the 3 and 6 range in the East. I think they could swoop a couple of spots higher because I'm not really sure, you know, can the Pacers duplicate what they did last season? How do the Raptors look with Kawhi? Is Kawhi still Kawhi? There's several question marks, but I think the Bucks are right around the middle of the East. And then obviously, depending on how Budenholzer gets these guys going offensively and defensively, I really like the ceiling of this team. So I think they could go a couple pegs higher, but I think 13 to start off is really fair.
Yeah, like you guys said, I think at this point in the season, 13 is probably fair, but there is a lot of potential to rise in these rankings and really dominate. And like Corey mentioned, Mike Budenholzer coming over, he's going to implement a new system offensively and defensively, definitely add some nice touches to that team. What were your thoughts on bringing over Coach Bud?
I think it was a safe move, and I don't say that with any disrespect. I think they were faced with the choice of going with a new coach, or not necessarily a new coach, but a new coach in the NBA in terms of Messina or someone like that. And I think in the end, this ownership group, if you remember when they came in, they brought Jason Kidd with them, and that was their. He was their sort of project, and that has been a failure. So I think that they probably in the end got together and thought, well, we don't want to go down the path of bringing in another new coach. They are on the clock with Giannis, and I think everyone's pretty aware of that. So they brought in Bud, who's obviously experienced coach, well-renowned, has been a good coach in the league. He's had success. That Atlanta team obviously was his watermark here, but you know, I think he schemes well on both sides of the balls, and I think that's going to be big for this team. It's hard not to look at this squad and feel like everything they've been able to achieve so far has been purely through raw talent, and they haven't really ever felt like they've had an offensive scheme. The defense has obviously been ridiculed all over the place. So I think just having a full off season with Bud's going to be big for this team. I'm really excited to see what they can bring.
What you just said, what stuck out, and I think you're spot on, is the fact that this team has been doing what they've been doing with simply raw talent and lack of a leader leading this team. And I think now they have that guy. And as you mentioned, his time in Atlanta, the 60-win season that the Hawks had the 1 year sticks out. I mean, there was no superstar on that team. Yeah, Paul Millsap and Al Horford were very good, and Damari Carroll was right around his peak and everything. That team was just really good. But, you know, he's never had a piece like Antetokounmpo. And I just think the sky's the limit if this team gets a set offensive system involved. And then, you know, defensively they've been up and down. But the one thing I've always loved about this Bucks team is the fact they have a lot of guys with crazy wingspans, and they just have the potential, especially in how the NBA has gone into, you know, switchability and needing to be able to guard multiple positions. This Bucks team really has that kind of team that can guard, you know, Antetokounmpo can guard 1 through 5, arguably. Middleton, you know, 2 through 4. Brogdon, 1 through 3. Obviously, some small forwards are going to be too big for him, but this team just has a lot of switchability, and I think Budenholzer is going to get the most out of this Bucks team when it comes to that. And then offensively, you know, once the ball starts moving around, I think they did a good job adding a couple shooters this offseason. I think this Bucks team, you know, as long as Budenholzer and everyone are on the same page, you know, by mid-December, I think this Bucks team is going to be really, really good.
Yeah, like you guys said, I think Bud's going to help a lot of these players take their game to a next level and put them in a really good position to succeed. But looking at some other of this year's additions, you know, looking at draft picks, Dante DiVincenzo at 17th overall. You know, some people thought this was maybe a reach. Very good competitor, had a really nice combine. What are your thoughts on drafting DiVincenzo at 17?
I'm intrigued by it. It wasn't a pick where on the night I was absolutely thrilled. I think he could be good, but I think there's also a high potential there of it not working out.
Yeah.
I probably was a little gun shy on the pick because the Bucks have not drafted well for a while in the first round. And it's probably been, you know, one of the biggest things that's held them back is their lack of contributions from first round picks. Obviously Jabari was, you know, the injuries took that away, and that's a really high level pick, and that was the only real pick we got at that point. But then Thon, obviously there's a lot of question marks there. Rashad Vaughn, he's gone. DJ Wilson hasn't shown a lot to this point, and yeah, you know, it's unclear whether he's ever going to be able to be a guy that's going to contribute. So you'd like to see them hit on a guy, and I don't really see that many opportunities for DiVincenzo straight off the bat. I think there's a lot of guys that are probably going to be ahead of him. But again, if he can come in and knock down threes, then it's going to be big for this team. And that's clearly what they've identified, a guy with some nice size that can shoot the three. So I understand what they were looking at. I'm not 100% sure whether the pick's going to work out, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I liked DiVincenzo coming out of college. Obviously, he had that really nice Final Four run. And then, of course, he killed it at the Combine. I think this was a little bit of a stretch. I think he was drafted probably, you know, like 10 spots too high almost. I saw him as a late first rounder, not a, you know, just out of the lottery pick. I mean, the one thing this Bucks team has desperately lacked in the last couple seasons are, you know, floor spacers. It's the reason that Jason Terry at the age of what, 40, it feels like at this point, he's got to be 40.
80? No, I'm just kidding.
You know, Jason Terry continues to play at the age of, 40. Last year he was 40 years old and he played in 51 games. You know, they need three-point shooting badly. So I understand getting, you know, DiVincenzo, taking the risk on a guy who possibly can play, you know, 15 to 20 minutes and kind of be that, you know, shooter off the bench. So I understand the move, but I'm with you. I don't know necessarily how much time he's really going to get this year. Unless he comes into preseason really in shape and really surprises, I don't see a ton of time for him.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it could go either way with a pick. Like Kane mentioned, you know, the ceiling isn't super high either. But looking at some of the free agent signings, they signed Brook Lopez, one-year deal, $3.3 million. You know, great value, a nice floor spacer, inside scorer, rim protector. Obviously, the lateral movement defensively is a question mark. But what were your thoughts on bringing over Brook on a really nice deal?
Yeah, Lopez was a home run. I don't think, I don't think anyone can really view that in any other light. To get a guy like that, you know, this is only one season ago, he was averaging 20 points a game. He is what he is defensively, and I think, you know, he's been around long enough for everyone to be aware of that. But he's a really versatile guy offensively now, and especially, you know, stretching the floor out to the three-point line. It's probably what the Bucks have lacked over the past few years. They haven't had that floor spacer, and that's why I think, you know, they have been they were so high on Thon Maker again, who, you know, we still have high hopes for. But I think this is a guy that the Bucks realized, like, do we want to go try out John Henson and Thon Maker again, or we got this guy for $3 million, you know, for a team that's really cash strapped salary cap wise? They get a guy that they know that they can plug in straight away to the starting lineup. He's going to play 25 minutes, he's going to get points, and he's going to create room for Giannis. And I think that's the biggest thing. He commands respect from the defense, and that's only going to make life easier for Giannis. And at the end of the day, that's what everything should be about, because the easier you can make life for Giannis, well, we've already seen what he can do when the whole defense is focused on him. So any help he can get is big. And, you know, I couldn't believe they got Lopez for $3 million, but it's a great signing.
big fan of this signing. This was a win. Brook Lopez is a offensive center, as we know. Defensively, you know, he's not great. He can still block some shots around the rim, but as we know, he's just a little bit slow. And offensively, him being slow just feels like it works. It's like he puts everyone in slow-mo as he goes to work. Obviously, the three-point shot of his has developed better and better these last couple seasons. And now he's really a weapon out behind the arc. So you like that because that's another floor spacer. You know, Antetokounmpo drives to the rim, and now around the three-point line, you have Middleton, Lopez, Bledsoe, and, you know, whoever else you end up throwing out there. I'm not positive on the starting five. We'll get to that later on in the show. But I really like Brook Lopez from an offensive standpoint. I think him in the pick and pop and pick and roll with Antetokounmpo is going to be very good. I think he's the perfect complementary center to a hopefully further developed Thon Maker. And, you know, anything I think that puts John Henson farther down on the depth chart is probably for the best.
Yeah, I love the Lopez signing, like you guys mentioned. I think Bud's going to get a really great use out of him. He uses floor spacers in his, scheme a lot. And I believe Lopez 2 seasons ago had a rare, 5-3, 5-block game against the Bucks. So I'm sure they remember that very well. So I like Lopez, obviously, and I think he'll have a really nice season. But they also signed Irsan Ilyasova, 3-year, 21 mil, third year, not guaranteed. You know, some people thought this was a little bit of an overpay, but they got some much-needed depth and more floor spacing.
Yeah, it probably was an overpay. He's 31 years now. He's going to turn 32 years old during the season. But this guy is still contributing. And, he was sort of tucked away in Atlanta there for a while off the radar. And Philadelphia picked him up late in the season. And I've just got the numbers here. I mean, he was shooting 36% from three. He was getting you 10 points a night. In 20 minutes. I mean, this guy can still contribute. He's always been a rebounder. He will, he takes charge. I mean, Bucks fans know he takes charge as well as anyone in the whole damn league. I think he's going to be a solid addition to the rotation. The frustration probably with the pick was, the picking him up in free agency was, well, out of the Bucks have a history of doing this, why are you locking down Ilyasova at 1201 at the, it was one of the first deals that came through. I didn't expect the Bucks were going to be involved at all in free agency. I got my Twitter notification set up here and this comes through and I'm like, well, okay. I'm not sure Ilyasova for $7 million a year was really necessary at this point, especially when you consider now he's getting paid double what Brook Lopez is. So that's probably the concern of most people. I don't think there's too many issues about him actually what he'll do on the court. I think it was another really solid addition, and he's a guy that's going to play, big minutes in this side.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest issue too, is just the contract. I think it also put them in the hard cap or in the luxury tax or close to the threshold, yeah. If I'm right. I think so, at least. I'm not positive. I'm not a big cap guy. But I know that the contract is slightly high. But like you mentioned, I mean, Irsan Ilyasova has always been a productive player for the most part. You know, he averages for his career 11 and 6, 44% from the field, 36% from three. Yeah, it's exactly the kind of guy the Bucks need off the bench. A guy who can rebound a little bit, who can stretch the floor. He can play he obviously is a power forward. I think he's perfect for what the Bucks are looking for, which is simply, to me, it's guys who can rebound and guys who can shoot. And this is exactly the kind of guy you want.
Yeah, it seems like it'll be a good fit. We'll see what happens. They also signed Pat Connaughton, 2 years, $3 million and change. Low key, a very nice signing. What were your thoughts on picking him up?
Yeah, Connaughton's a guy that probably, isn't as well known around the league, but he's been steadily improving each year in the league with Portland. He played up to near 20 minutes a game last season. He can shoot the three. He can sort of do, all the things you want to do from a bench player at a, average level. And I think that's fine. I think, you touched on earlier Jason Terry, and not necessarily that I'll be playing the same minutes, but these are the type of guys that the Bucks have had to play in their rotation and been forced to play those guys. So, look, Connaughton's, again, for the minimum deal, I wasn't jumping up and down about it, but, you know, he's a solid sign, and I think an underrated one. And out of all the guys you could have picked up for the minimum there, it'll be decent. And again, he's probably going to play 10, 15 minutes a night.
Yeah, this was another sneaky good signing, I think. Obviously, Pat last year was with the Portland Trailblazers for the last 3 years. Last year was really the first time he got considerable playing time. He played in all 82 games at some point, shot 35% from three. I like it. It's another guy who can shoot the long ball, a guy who can come off and space the floor. Again, this is what I think Budenholzer's offense is all about. It's about finding guys who can space the floor. I think it's just all about finding weapons for Antetokounmpo because, you know, obviously we all hope Antetokounmpo develops a jump shot. But realistically, if that doesn't happen, the best version would be for Antetokounmpo to do whatever he wants on the court, drive to the hoop, and have just numerous targets around the three-point line.
Yeah, at worst case, a low-key, you know, some nice wing depth. Looking at free agent losses, they lost Brandon Jennings, Xavier Munford, Marshall Plumlee, Jabari Parker, Jason Terry. What are your thoughts on these guys? Do you think they're going to miss them, or is there anybody you wish they re-signed?
Yeah, I think probably the only one really worth touching on is obviously Jabari. And, you know, probably the disappointment around Parker is more to do with the fact that this is a second overall pick from just a few years ago that you thought at the time was going to be the face of the franchise for, you know, you hope the next decade, next to Giannis. So by the time, you know, the time came to free agency, I think we were all pretty well okay with the fact that Parker was going to move on. It just wasn't working out. He didn't seem happy. Obviously, in the playoffs, he had that moment where, you know, he sort of expressed his disappointment with not getting playing time. And I feel like that was probably one of the last straws at that point. It was pretty clear to everyone why he wasn't getting minutes. And it's because he has zero effort on defense. And, you know, he sulks on the floor. And he's been through a lot. And, you know, I really hope that a fresh start will be good for him and he'll be able to come back and be the guy that we know he can be. But he after everything he went from, he didn't automatically earn the right to come walk back into a side and the team in mid February and be one of the key guys. It didn't work that way. He seemed frustrated about it. I think the Bucks were probably ready to move on, and it's a terrible waste of an asset at the end of the day. And you consider Embiid just went one pick after him, so that's always going to sting. But yeah. But you know, in the end, I think it was the right move for him to go, and you know, disappointing, but that's the way it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any of these guys they truly miss. I think this is, you know, this is the direction the team wanted to take. Obviously, you know, they're going to look for guys who can kind of play defense, who can space the floor. You know, so Brandon Jennings, it was fun having that small reunion, but not going to miss him. Depending on how Jabari Parker turns out, maybe you miss him. But as of right now, I like this. I love this starting five, which we're going to get into in a second, without Jabari Parker there. I think he was kind of like he holds up what this team could be because you want to try and fit him in. And with him out of the picture, I actually think it opens up the Bucks to be more successful.
Yeah, like you guys mentioned, there was questions with the Jabari Parker fit, and then there was also chemistry concerns, like Kane mentioned. You know, would it maybe made sense to trade him at the deadline, maybe try to pick up even a small asset instead of losing him for nothing? But, you know, things happen. But Corey mentioned it. We're going to get into the starters. So who's starting five on opening night?
Yeah, I've got Bledsoe, Snell, Middleton, Giannis, Lopez. I think probably the only one that is really up for debate and depending on what you think they'll do with the center position, but I think Tony Snell starting at the two guard or Malcolm Brogdon, and I think that's probably where the battle is going to be. I like Snell starting though. He didn't have a great year last year. He pretty well dropped off in every that category he could have actually, but I still like him here as a genuine 3 and D guy. I think Budenholzer is going to be able to use him well. And I think that he is going to be a valuable guy that if he can shoot, because he was inconsistent last year. He was hot and cold. At the end of the day, he still shot 40% from three. He's not in there to score. And next to the four guys that can really fill it up in Bledsoe, Middleton, Giannis, Lopez, I think that his defensive versatility and ability to guard from two through four with his length is going to be enough for him to get the start. And I think Brogdon is very valuable running that second unit.
Yeah, so I'm basically the same besides the Tony Snell. I have Bledsoe at the one, Brogdon at the two, Middleton at the three, Antetokounmpo at the four, and I think Brook Lopez as well for offensive purposes starts at the five.
Yeah, I got the same lineup as Corey, but I can see what Kane's saying. I could see Tony Snell definitely starting because he wasn't bad in the regular season. It's really in the postseason. He just like at times was scared. It was like he's scared to have the ball in his hands and shoot. So that was kind of concerning. But like you said, Bud could definitely help him out. And I could see the point of wanting to have Brogdon run the second unit. They have so many guys that I think can run the offense when you look at Bledsoe, Brogdon, and Giannis. So we'll see what happens. But I think that'd be a battle to keep an eye on. But what would be your breakout starter in the starting five?
I think, this might sound a little funny, but I think it's going to be Middleton because – I think last year we seen him have that career year and he topped the 20-point mark. He was a borderline all-star. But he did have that slow start again, and he is, you know, really prone to having a really, really slow start to the season. And last year, really, it was actually Malcolm Brogdon that carried that lineup through the first month before the Bledsoe trade. I've just got some of the numbers up here, and yeah, he was really struggling in October, 20% from three, 38% from the field. Look, I think he's going to come out of the blocks. I think his confidence is going to be an all-time high. I think the playoffs was big for him. I think being with the Team USA camp was big for him. I think this is the year that he goes from being a guy that is potentially underrated across the league to legitimately, no one is underrating this guy. I think he probably pushes towards an all-star level, and I think he's in for a monster year.
And it's a contract year, which is always huge.
Yeah, that's a big one as well.
Yeah. What do you got, Corey?
My breakout starter, even though, okay, so it's tough because, like, I think Antetokounmpo is going to take his game to the next level, but I don't think that's a breakout. I just think that's kind of like what we all expect. For me, it's going to be Malcolm Brogdon. I think if he's healthy, then his game has to take a jump. You know, he shot an average of 10 shots per game last year in those 40 games he played. His numbers were good efficiency-wise. So for me, it's Brogdon. I think if he's healthy, we're going to see the defensive impact. And I think offensively, he's going to be a guy who I think really benefits from the fact that the added shooters, Middleton, as you said, Kane probably takes another step in his game. Antetokounmpo goes farther. I think the supporting cast around a young Brogdon who's healthy, I think his numbers are going to explode this year. I think he's going to be a guy who averages over 15 points per game, may shoot even over 40% from three while being the defensive stopper on this team.
I'm going to go with the easy one. I'm going to go with Antetokounmpo. I mean, we've all seen
the alley-oop, Nick.
Yeah, you know, we've seen what he's looked like in the offseason. He looks like a monster. And obviously, we talked about coaching and how much Bud is probably going to help him take his game to the next level and help the other players on the team. And the spacing they added should just open up the lane, because I know we all saw in the playoffs at times Boston just kind of collapsed the paint. And we're like, all right, Giannis, you can't really shoot, so we're going to make it hard for you. Now when he has teammates that can actually spread the floor and knock down threes, I think it's going to make his life a lot easier. And, you know, obviously there's plenty of talk about him being in the MVP conversation, so I wouldn't be surprised that's something we see. But breakout bench player.
I'm really excited to see Sterling Brown. I think we certainly saw that he was able to get more of an opportunity under Joe Prunty after Kidd left. Every time he got his opportunity under Kidd, he seemed to do some things. But I think he's going to be an important bench player. I think he's really going to become one of those guys that's like consistently in the rotation, even with the additions of some of the guys. And when we were getting back to DiVincenzo before, I think Sterling Brown is a guy that's like going to really stop him from breaking into the rotation. He's a really, really rugged defender. He's physical. He is not afraid to mix it with anyone. He can shoot the three. He can put the ball on the floor. He'll rebound for a guard. I really like Sterling Brown. He's another one of these second-round picks like Brogdon. didn't quite get the same opportunity as Brogdon did as a rookie, but I like him a lot. I think he's ready-made and he's good to go.
My breakout bench player is going to be Thon Maker. Obviously I have him coming off the bench because Brook Lopez is starting. So I think for me, it's naturally got to be Thon Maker. Again, I'm going to go into the season extremely high on Thon Maker because for me, it ended on a really positive note. He was phenomenal in the playoffs. In six games last year, he played after 21 minutes. And he averaged almost two blocks a game, 5.5 points, shot the ball decently well. 39% is not great, but I just feel like his impact defensively is what we all expect and hope from him, and that's what he was given in that playoff series. So for me, it's going to be Thon Maker coming off, being the kind of rim runner we expect him to be, the jump shot slightly better, and maybe even playing his way into the starting rotation, and then Brook Lopez becomes, the sixth or seventh man off the bench.
I'm going with Thon, too. I've been on that bandwagon for a while. I know he has struggled, but he does show flashes during the regular season. And I think, obviously, like Corey mentioned, during the postseason, he had some really big moments where he was just, dominant. So I'm looking for Thon to step up. And I think, he's so young, like Kane mentioned, I think 21 years old. He can still put some muscle on, get some size, and really just develop his skill set. But talking wins, what is best-case scenario for the Bucks next year?
Best-case scenario in terms of what they can do, just wins wise, they're going to be 50 plus. This is something they've only done once since the 80s when you're talking about a 50 win season. So this is, I think for a lot of other teams, you're like, oh, 50 wins is the benchmark. But this would be a genuinely special season for the Bucks. But I think 50 wins is there for the taking. They don't need to improve that much from last year. I think the roster's stronger. I think some of the younger guys are a year older there. You spoke about Thon. He's a guy that can be a difference maker and push them over the edge there. So, look, I think 50 wins is a benchmark for sure for them to say, okay, we've had a successful regular season. But I think that's what they're aiming for regular season-wise. And the playoffs, I think there should be no ceiling on what this team could do in the East. I don't even think about championships when I think about teams in the East outside of maybe Boston. But in terms of the East, they can, if everything clicks, and we're not going to know this until around the Christmas time and we see the way that they're playing and the actual difference you see in their play, but the sky's the limit for them in the East.
My best case scenario for the Bucks is 55 wins and then a 2 or 3 seed in the East. That's this team coming out of preseason, hit the ground running. Budenholzer got these guys flowing on all, running on all cylinders. Antetokounmpo's at what I expect to be an MVP-like season. Everyone's healthy and this team is just, rolling through teams. So I think that's best case scenario for me.
Yeah, best case for me is not too far behind, 53 to 54 wins. One of the top seeds, probably third or fourth, and a lot of potential. And I think there is a scenario where they could possibly get to the Eastern Conference Finals. What are your guys' thoughts on that? How far can they go in the postseason?
I've got, and this is...
In best case scenario-wise, not just actual prediction.
Well, best case scenario, they can get to the finals because I think... To have success in the playoffs, you have to have that high level star, and they've got that. If they get in there, then Giannis is probably the MVP. That's probably the way it's going to work out. He's probably going to have a season on that level, and then you're probably going to have guys like Middleton who are clear all stars, and then Bledsoe steps up as well, and everyone, it all clicks. So you're talking about everything clicking, but based on the talent that they have, with proper coaching, that would be the best case scenario. And I don't think anyone would look back on that and be completely shocked if that happened. I think people were sort of hesitant to go that far with the Bucks because they've just perennially disappointed. But I think if it happened, everyone would be like, yeah, I could probably see that.
Eastern Conference Finals. I made the hot take, I believe, on episode 40 of Full Access Hoops, the podcast I host. I'm a big fan of this Bucks team, and I truly believe that if everything goes right, which I almost really expect it to be, I think Antetokounmpo is going to probably win MVP. I think this Bucks team is going to roll through teams in the playoffs, and I think it's going to be set for another Celtics Bucks, you know, 6-7 game series. I'm not sure if they win that series, but right now I have a really strong feeling that this Bucks team will make it to the Eastern Conference Finals.
All right, you heard it from Corey right there. And Kane, what's going on the negative side? What's a worst case scenario?
Well, I don't really want to bring up what the actual worst case scenario is, but it revolves around someone getting injured, and I'm not willing to discuss that.
We don't want to speak it into existence. We don't got to mention it.
So what I will say is the worst case scenario will be another first round exit. That would be for that to happen. And look, the top of the East is competitive. So depending on where they finish in the seeding, if they, you know, they don't get home court and they come up against, you know, one of these teams, it's obviously conceivable, but that would be, not a good situation for this team to be in. Again, remembering that Giannis is getting each year closer to that free agency.
Yeah, I think worst case scenario right there with you. It's a first round exit. It's even this team not being a top five seed in the East. You know, if they're somewhere between the 6 and 8 seed range, they make the first round of the playoffs. Even no matter what happens in the first round, it's already a loss to me if they're not in the top five seeds. Yeah. Realistically, this should be a team that clinches home court. So if they don't do that and they're, like you said, they get bounced in the first round, yeah, it's a major failure then.
Yeah, I agree with Corey and Kane as well. I think, you know, a bottom seed getting knocked out in the first round is not going to be a great look. And like you mentioned and hinted at this whole show is Giannis's, you know, free agency is eventually going to come up. Is he going to be happy where the Bucks are at, or is he going to want to leave and go to a bigger destination? But what is your actual prediction for the Bucks next year?
I think they get through the first round. I think they make the second round, and I think they do top that 50-win mark. I think they probably again get to that series with, you know, Boston or Philly, and I think it would be a terrific series on paper. But I think that they probably, certainly against Boston, man for a man, I think they get outmatched. Remembering that, you know, last season, obviously Hayward and Irving were missing. And I think they'll match up better with Brad Stevens. They were clearly outmatched coaching-wise last year. But I think the second round is probably where I have them right now.
Yeah. So the Vegas over-under for the Bucks is 46.5 wins. I'm over that. I think they get 50 wins. I think this is right between 49 and 51 wins. I think they're going to be right around there. I think a first round win should be a lock. I think the second round is where they're going to be tested. You know, obviously my best case scenario is really what I think is going to happen. I think this is going to be an Eastern Conference Finals team. But my record prediction is probably going to be between 49 and 51 wins, somewhere between the 3 and 5 seed range. If I had to guess, and in each of conference finals appearance.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 49, 50 wins, you know, probably a 4 or 5 seed. And I see them getting probably bounced in the second round unless, you know, everything kind of goes smoothly. But on to the most important question of the show. What emoji represents the Bucks for you, Kane?
Yeah, I was laughing when I seen this question because the first thing that came to my mind was probably how I would have looked if people had saw me watching the Bucks over the last few years. And probably the thing that came to my mind first was that emoji with like the dead straight mouth and eyes. Because, you know, this team has been so frustrating over the years. And every time you think that things are about to go well, you know, it might be Jabari Parker goes down with an injury, or, you know, Jason Kidd, you remember that Jason Kidd, your coach, like everything, you know, just it's been so hard to be, you know, optimistic about them. So that's probably where it's been. But I'm hoping in a couple of months' time that's I can give more of an optimistic answer there.
My emoji, it's a toss up. I have two. So I'm just gonna do the first one. So the one with the emoji's head like exploding because its mind is blown. That's just going to be me come playoff time when this team is really in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm questioning if the Celtics even have a chance in the series.
Oh,
so spicy. that's my one emoji. And then the other emoji is the I don't even know what it. Wait, I'm just gonna flip my camera on so you guys can see what I'm doing. Like, what is this emoji? What is this? Like the rad? I don't even know.
I don't know. I know Aaron Rodgers does that sometimes after he scores a touchdown.
Yeah, so like, you know, I'm D-Lo. I'm calling from downtown. I don't know. Damn, I don't know what to call this emoji. The radical emoji?
Yeah, it's that kind of sounds like the radical hand sign, I guess. You know, yeah, thumb and pinky out and the rest of the fingers down.
We're describing the emoji to everyone listening. Hopefully you can figure it out. Totally, dude.
If not, DM Corey. For me, I'm going to go with the baby emoji because I think this team is going to be reborn under Coach Budenholzer. I think he's going to implement a lot of great things and get the best out of players. League pass-wise, though, where does this team stand, 1 through 10?
I think they're 9. I think Giannis is – yeah, he's like I mentioned earlier. I think he's become one of the guys that is just must watch TV. You never know what he. I mean, this guy jumps over a human in the game,
like, literally.
If you're not emotionally invested in the Bucks, I think they're a seriously entertaining team for a variety of reasons, like for the good and bad. But yeah, Giannis is like, I don't know where his ceiling is, and I think that's the ridiculous thing at this point. He's gotten better every single year, and for pure entertainment, just from watching that guy, I think they're a 9. I think they're one of the more watchable teams going around.
I'm really excited to say this is my highest league pass rating so far on the show, and I'm right there with you, Kane. It's a 9 for me as well. I think Antetokounmpo gives this team a 7 by himself, basically.
Yeah.
He is the Greek freak. I don't know if you've seen the photos. This dude also put on like 10 pounds more muscle, it feels like, this offseason. He's completely yoked. And then you add in a head coach in Budenholzer who's got the resume that we can expect great things. You know, if this team is healthy, the additions they had, I think this team is a 9. I think especially if Antetokounmpo plays at the MVP level, at least that I'm expecting, plus the guys around him under a actual head coach, this team is going to be really fun to watch, I think.
Yeah, I'm right there with you guys. I'm at an 8.5, you know, maybe slightly a little bit less, but like you guys, for all the same reasons, Antetokounmpo was pretty much must watch, and you want to see how Bud kind of gets these new pieces to work together. But what TV show would you watch over the Bucks? Obviously hypothetical, but if you had to pick a TV show with a gun to your head, what would it be?
What TV show would I watch over the Bucks?
Yes. So in this case, you know, being a Bucks guy, it would probably be your favorite TV show or at least one of them.
Well, my favorite TV show of all time is Breaking Bad, it's not that close. I don't watch a lot of TV, but Breaking Bad was just there's shows that I watched that, you know, you get burnt out by it after a while. Like even back in the day, like I thought the season one of like Prison Break or something like that was like incredible, but then by season two you're just like, okay, I get it, like these guys are just
breaking out of prison. Yeah.
I understand, you know, there's only so many times I can watch this, but Breaking Bad was just like right until the last. But like, it's pretty rare that you have a show like that have, I think it was like 5 or 6 seasons, and at the end you're just like, okay, this could go on for another 6 seasons. Like I thought it was just unbelievable TV.
Yeah, for me, I'm actually picking one of my top shows. I'm gonna have to make a list of my top 25 all-time shows. But for me, it's Entourage. It's one of my favorite shows. I remember watching it as a kid, like when we had HBO, and like randomly I'd watch a couple episodes. And then one of my best friends ends up, you know, he had the entire series on DVD, and the episodes are 30 minutes long. And let me just say, I think I finished it in, you know, probably a week, 9 seasons, because 30 minute episodes, just like, this is the perfect amount to binge. Like I can just watch an entire season in 6 hours. So for me, it's Entourage.
Yeah, both great choices. I went with True Detective. I believe they're dropping a new season in early 2019. Really good show. I like how they kind of change it up with different different actors and actresses every season. But that's it for me. Any last thoughts on the Bucks for you guys? Anything you want to throw out there?
I just think it's an exciting time. Obviously, a new arena as well. We haven't touched on that, but that is now open. And they're playing a couple of preseason games there. But you know, that's going to be pretty exciting from all the stuff I've seen. It's an unbelievable venue, and I think that, you know, with all the excitement and the expectation of what feels like a new era, even within Giannis's career, I think it should be an exciting ride.
My final thoughts are, I will officially go on the record and say that Giannis Antetokounmpo will win MVP this upcoming season.
Oh, well, we didn't ask you that, but I guess you don't have to watch the prediction show now. No,
well, hopefully, you know, not everyone, I mean, and you know, you got to put it out twice. That's all.
Yeah. But that wraps it up. Kane, tell everyone where they could find you on Twitter and find your work.
Yeah, you can get me on Twitter. It's at MKE Bucks Oz, AUS, that is. I write for the Pick and Roll Australia, so I do a lot of coverage there, covering the Australians, which is, the number is growing. I find myself writing the occasional daily piece, so don't hold that against me. But and other than that, I'm on Fansided. I do some stuff for Hoops Habit and the Step Back as well.
Awesome. And Corey, as always, a pleasure to talk to you, and check out Corey's pod, Full Access Hoops. And a big thanks to everybody for listening. You can catch out all the other shows on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Peace out, knuckleheads.